powerful elements. We're dead set against utilizing those sites. Neighborhood complaints as well as business complaints. So you're trying to find a location that doesn't have that element adjacent to it. About the only place that we could think of that is public property that's owned outright by the citizens is the Immolite Center. So we're now have written a letter to Jan Buch asking that we sit down with her and see if we can work out some way to utilize that site as an interim site for families with children and homeless people in general. I guess the vehicles is what we asked for here, remember. As a way to do that, setting up some process that would be simple so the police would know who's there, who's supposed to be there, we've got security and border bodies and all the rest of the stuff. So that's kind of where we are on that issue.
What is the main opposition for doing safe sleeping zones, whether it's the county building or whether it's going to be Emmeline or whatever, is the main opposition coming from the leadership, county leadership or officials because they're afraid of neighborhood complaints? Is it because they're afraid something's going to happen? I don't quite understand what the problem is. I know people are saying no, but I don't understand why.
I think there's a combination of factors. Like in the industrial parks, the businesses were upset and the residents were upset because it was in their neighborhood.
Right.
It's the NIMBY process we seem to be dealing with in the community big time. In talking with Marty Warmout, who also said that she would support establishing safe sleeping zones, the concern was that somehow by acknowledging and setting up a place like that, they might be acknowledging that they've got this big problem. And it's better to try to work out a full-term, long-term solution than it is to set up interim steps in her mind. And I guess Jan Buch told her that she would have it over her dead body, having homeless people sleep in her district. So I'm not for certain. That's why we're trying to sit down with Jan, since the Emmeline Center's in her district, and find out what her objections are, what, if anything, we can do to mitigate those objections, and then how we can move forward from there.
Scott on your deal, though, you know.
Yeah, they're right, Scott, though. Uh-huh. But anyway, I'd like to add something to that, is that Jan now has formally gone on public record denying that statement, and I was very happy about that. So maybe it's a negotiable position now, but I don't know.
But what, is this purely discrimination against homeless people, or is in fact there some obstacles to developing safe sleeping zones that can't be overcome? I understand, the neighborhood situation, and I understand the backlash that can happen, especially if the city or the county or whoever's going to do this does not really plan it out so the obstacles are minimized, so the environmental impact or the neighborhood impact is minimized. If you don't do that first, you're going to wind up getting a backlash and everybody's going to backpedal. So you got to do something, some planning around it. And I understand all that. It doesn't have to be years of planning. It could be weeks or even days of planning, for that matter, if you really have a commitment. But so I'm still not quite clear. Becky?
I'd like to give a shot at that. I think that the logistics of setting up, say, a car park at Emmeline or a campground at some other property are not that difficult. I mean, campgrounds have been set up. You can get porta-potties. You can get potable water. You can get monitors. It's not even that expensive to do it. Other programs can be more expensive than that. But you can't do it without dealing with what we call the magnet effect.
That's what people are worried about. The magnet theory.
It's alive and well in people's minds. And, if any of you have the stamina to overcome these objections, you're going to have to really educate yourself on whether there is a magnet effect. Is there any evidence to say that if you provide a service for homeless people, or if you make a law that's very draconian and make it less draconian, that will be inundated with homeless people from outside the area?
You see, my feeling about that is you can't make decisions. you cannot make public policy decisions for in to benefit your residents on the basis of what you think it may attract from outside your revenue, your environment. That's not good public policy. Public policy needs to be made on the basis of the needs of the community where you're in. To say, oh my God, if we do a good job, you know, if we have a great community, everybody's going to move here and we won't have a great community. I mean, that's what you're saying, whether it's homeless or anybody else.
I'm not saying that.
No. I understand. I understand.
So
that's what you...
And we're listening to Arnie Leff talking at the Homeless Working Group, as well as a couple of other candidates, about issues such as the sleeping ban. As you can see, he is becoming quite articulate forthcoming on his opinions on these issues, although he initially refused to answer questions. I got a quick call from David Silva, an activist who has worked for years on ending the sleeping ban and was, of course, betrayed by City Council this summer. They promised they'd put it on the ballot, and then his own man, Tim Fitzmaurice, betrayed him as well and shut down debate on July 25th on that issue. Actually, and he also shut it down on August 1st when it was brought up by Mike Rotkin. So it was a complete betrayal by City Council on the sleeping ban. He called me, and that's not his opinion, by the way, that's my opinion. He called me just now and wanted to mention a story in today's Sentinel, which he is concerned that Gordon Pusser, who has been a sort of a supporter of various candidates in the past, and he supports Dick Dubrava and Emily Riley now, has apparently made some statements about you can only run if you can afford it. I'm not quoting him exactly because I haven't got the article before me, but David Silva, in saying that was the quotation, was concerned that there is a kind of that kind of mentality would exclude working and poor candidates such as Bonnie Moore, and I guess would Steve argue as well, from consideration, and he wanted people to look at that front page story on the Sentinel. I, of course, asked him to look at Arnie Leff and his disgraceful performance on the Citizens Police Review Board and his fumbling around on this sleeping ban issue. He somehow found the right answers to give the Green Party, and the Green Party was, bamboozled without having the information, just taking the recommendations of its subcommittee into choosing Leff and Bugenthal, and I guess did they endorse a third? I think they may have endorsed Bonnie Moore, perhaps. I'm not sure if they did. But I am really concerned that a person whose behavior is so reactionary on the issue of police review, which is so intimately tied to homeless rights issues, I don't see how one can support such a person on other homeless rights issues with any confidence, even though Arnie now says he favors... He's actually given three different answers at three different times to the issue of the sleeping ban. When he talked to Becky Johnson and myself and Bee's Cafe, he wasn't going to talk about the question at all or answer it. When he talked to... I guess I was told that he favored ending the whole camping ban because he voted to support the Homeless Issues Task Force, which does support ending the entire camping ordinance, since you shouldn't have to criminalize putting up a tent if people have no place to go. And finally, he's said that recently that he supports just the sleeping ban, striking the sleeping ban, that is. And so he hasn't been saying any of this at public forums. None of them have been saying, strike sections A and B. Scott Bugenthal has said something about ending the sleeping ban, but then he immediately jumps into safe zones. So it's hard to tell, since safe zones are often a cover for not doing anything, because who can find the safe zones? That's always the sticking point. Our objective is to make sure people end the sleeping ban first, then worry about the safe zones later.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Now, wait a minute. That's not three different answers.
Oh, okay. Well,
if he refuses to answer you at one meeting, you know, that doesn't count as a type of an answer. And the second time, if you're saying that because he supports Homeless Issues Task Force, he supports repeal of the entire camping ban, that's not true because that was their midterm report. Their final report did not include the repeal of the entire camping ban. So that's not that's not one of the answers.
Well, no,
he had only one answer, and that was repeal.
That's not true, David. The actual final report. Hello? Well,
my caller hung up, but let me clarify that in there. That was David Silva again, who is a supporter of Arnie Leff and certainly has a right to his say. The final task force report, the Homeless Issues Task Force report, did have repeal the camping ban in it. It was in an introductory section, however. It was not one of the 28 specific recommendations that were itemized in the body of the report, but it was in the introduction. And Arnie's statements about supporting the entire report indicated that, as they were passed back to me, that he voted to support the entire report, which included repealing the camping ordinance. And I thought that was a kind of a backhanded way to do it. If you're going to come up and stand up and do it, then say so. And particularly do so at a time when David Silva and others are fasting, when I'm out there getting a pie in my face, when homeless people are getting beaten up by troll busters. But Arnie Leff, throughout this entire period, was rather silent on the issue. He never showed up at a city council meeting supporting safe zones or ending the sleeping ban. He never made any public statements to that effect in any meaningful way that I'm aware of. He may have made some comments at Citizens Police Review Board meetings in passing. But frankly, that's not advocacy for my money, and I think it's really important. Arnie Leff knows what an advocate is. I understand he was an advocate around issues of medical marijuana, although maybe he just simply did low-key medical marijuana doctor prescription or assistance, and I'm not entirely clear on that, but I hear good things about his early work on that issue. But I haven't seen him come out against the drug war locally, for example, and that's a key part of police review, to investigate what kind of police expenditures go into the drug war. Leff has been on this board for 2 years. Leff has been on the Citizens Police Review Board for a year and a half, actually. He's been the chair of the board. He controls, he makes the agenda. He has had a majority on a number of occasions when the more conservative members aren't there. He's never used the opportunity to do anything of significance on that board. In spite of clear pressure, clear direction from people ranging from the African American community in December of 1999 to the activist community in the summer of 1999 around the Steve Argue, the mini police riot outside the Democratic Party fundraiser when it was bombing in Yugoslavia that was the issue, and when the issue was Officer Lefebvre's attack on a woman and child, and the general officer's attack on the crowd that was inappropriate. Arnie has never made public statements, and when it came to such a thing as a street newspaper and the right of Steve Argue to sell a street newspaper, he has repeatedly upheld the police chief. Repeatedly. On the one occasion when they came up with a separate issue which said, well, the police chief should have informed the sergeants that there is a law in Santa Cruz that says you can sell a street newspaper without a permit. So the police chief was apparently derelict and he was remiss in his duty and not informing the sergeants. Police chief whined and complained, and Arnie ended up saying, oh, it was a flub. He was wrong. The police chief was okay. And it really amazes me that an individual like David Silva, who has fought for so long to get justice in the police department, and he has been beaten up by the cops. This guy was thrown into a pillar in 1996 in a action that effectively ended his candidacy for city council. And this man has fought for years for the sleeping ban. That I'm baffled by David's support of Arnie Leff. And, I mean, I'm going to be baffled by a lot of things, and certainly David has a right to his opinion, and who knows? Maybe Arnie will change if he goes into office. People can change in power, but usually they change for the worse, and that's my problem with people like Arnie Leff. He's had power, and we see what he has done with it. You don't want to give that kind of person more power. So, let's hear a little bit more of the Homeless Working Group, but first, a word from Tom Lehrer.
The heart of every man in our platoon must swell with pride for the nation's youth, the cream of which is marching at his side, for the fascinating rules and regulations that we share, and the quaint and curious costumes that we're called upon to wear. Now Al joined up to do his part defending you and me. He wants to fight and bleed and kill and die for liberty. With the hell of war, he's come to grips, policing up the filter tips. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. When Pete was only in the 7th grade, he stabbed a cop. He's real RA material, and he was glad to swap his switchblade and his old zip gun for a bayonet and a new M1. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. After Johnny got through basic training, he was a soldier through and through when he was done. Its effects were so well-rooted that the next day he saluted a good humor man, an usher, and a nun. Now, Fred's an intellectual, brings a book to every meal. He likes the deep philosophers, like Norman Vincent Peale. He thinks the army's just the thing because he finds it broadening. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. Now, Ed flunked out of 2nd grade and never finished school. He doesn't know a shelter half from an entrenching tool, but he's going to be a big success. He heads his class at OCS. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. Our old mess sergeant's taste buds had been shot off in the war, but his savory collations add to our esprit de corps. To think of all the marvelous ways they're using plastics nowadays, it makes a fella proud to be a soldier. Our lieutenant is the up-and-coming type. Played with soldiers as a boy, you just can bet. It is written in the stars, he will get his captain's bars, but he hasn't got enough box tops yet. Our captain has a handicap to cope with, sad to tell. He's from Georgia, and he doesn't speak the language very well. He used to be, so rumor has, the dean of men at Alcatraz. It makes a fella proud to be what as a kid I vowed to be. What luck to be allowed to be a soldier. At ease.
And we're
back on the air with David Silva. Hi, David.
Yeah, I'm sort of off and on the phone because this phone is used for the computer and we're doing a lot of stuff on the computer right now. Sorry about cutting you off.
No problem.
Just in case anybody doesn't know, Arnie Leff really was one of the prime movers for medical marijuana even before California had medical marijuana, Santa Cruz County did. And also, Arnie Leff is one of the five doctors in the entire United States who put their entire career on the line to sue Janet Reno over medical marijuana. And he put his practice in jeopardy. In fact, he had a shape down. He's now in a different office. He's no longer at Dominican there. He's in a different office, and he had a shape down his whole his whole business. I mean he went out on a large limb to fight for medical marijuana. And I think right now the person that is that you want to look to for defending and going after Barisone is Tim Fitzmaurice, because he's on the board of WAM and he's quite aware of the thing that's going on. Why Barisone decided to cut the time short, I don't know, because there was an understanding that we were going to have to the end of the month. Of course, now the end of the month has passed and we still haven't got a place yet.
Let me clarify
what
that.
What we need is we need a place.
David, let me clarify that for the audience. In fact, what I heard from John Barisone at the last city council meeting when he was talking to Kate Wells and other activists.
Well, people got to realize there's the co-op and collective marijuana, medical marijuana use, and then there's the buyers clubs, and there are two different kinds of operations. And the co-op and collectives.
Well, Barisone said he was
sort of shut out in the cold right now.
Barisone said he was going to go after both, is what he said. What he said aloud, and I heard him say it. He said they don't have their use permits. Nobody's going to distribute marijuana without a use permit, might take 60 days to get one. So this means people wander the levee for 60 days.
Before Barisone, we had the black market. We still have the black market right now. We run a black market on HIV drugs for people that don't have Medi-Cal and so forth like that. People that get raped and so forth. Mm-hmm. We have a black market network. We can get this black market network going again anyway. So fuck Barisone if he doesn't like it. We'll get a place. We'll do it legal eventually. But right now, we're not going to stop operating.
Excellent. Well, what I wanted to say was that I have not heard any...
Maybe I should say screw Barisone.
You don't want to get too personal.
We don't want to get too vulgar.
I know that no council candidate that I have heard or council member, and that includes Tim Fitzmaurice, has come out publicly and denounced this effort by Barisone.
I have the written statements of the candidates on that question.
Well, let me put it this way. I do not see the council candidates at the mic making the kinds of statements at the city council that might have some impact on the council, because according to Barisone at the last council meeting, he would not take that action if the council told him not to. So the council isn't giving him any direction the other way. And I don't. And Tim Fitzmaurice, as far as I know, has made no public statement on this. So you
he's
and I,
working,
of course, disagree on him
hard,
as well.
Yeah, he's working hard on the medical marijuana thing behind the scenes pretty hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's on the board. He's really working with Valerie.
It'd be nice if he came out from behind the scenes and actually put some pressure on Berasoni publicly, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. You know, but la consigliere is really hard to stand up to sometimes.
Hey, he's their employee. Come on, spare me.
Employee my ass.
Hey,
he's not the employee of the elected government, because the elected government does not have control of this fascist city staff.
They can
management.
Make a motion at any time to fire his
Stalinist. I always get confused with, since the trains are not running on time, I guess they're not fascists, they're Stalinists.
Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that I've never heard a motion from Fitzmaurice or any of these other clowns, or a recommendation from Arnie Leff that these people be fired. In fact, when that was brought up, Arnie Leff went into a tizzy and said, "That's an absurd question." So I gotta warn you, David. Watch out for the people you're supporting. They may win.
Well, I've had a lot of very strong, you know, conversations with Arnie about the police, and I'm quite satisfied with what his
Arnie Leff talks
are
a wonderful line.
No, it's not a wonderful line. It's a conversation between two friends, and I know where he stands.
I understand you believe that, and I know how he's acted for the last year and a half, and you've never answered those
objections. He's had a minority. He's never had the power you claim he has. He has, on
a number of occasions, had a majority, and he's always had the power to...
Because
they don't all show up.
I know they don't all show up.
Therefore, he's had the power repeatedly to do things and not done them when they don't show up, and also, he has the power to put things on the agenda, he has the power to publicly advocate, he has the power to hold subcommittee meetings. He has used none of these powers. He has the power to ask for a public hearing.
Well,
he doesn't do any of this, David, and
Robert,
I cannot understand.
You will be pleasantly surprised. When this man is elected, you'll be pleasantly surprised
when we
take the guns away from the police, when we completely reform the
citizenship. I will be dumbstruck, David.
Well, I know you're going to be.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye.
Thank you.
And I don't believe that that's an argument and a response to an actual record of bad behavior, that I will be surprised when it changes. You bet your butt I'll be surprised. In the meantime, we have to act with some prudence and understanding. You judge a person on the basis of what they've done, not on the basis of what they promise you in friendly conversations. I'm sorry, that kind of naivete is what's gotten us to the sleeping ban impasse, where certain activists have believed that if they trust Keith Sugar, if they trust Catherine Byers, all will be well. I got news for activists of that sort. You go to the other activists, you look at the record, you act together. That's what you do in these situations. I'm sorry, it upsets me because I've seen so much public policy. Essentially, the possibilities for a change in that policy destroyed because individuals somehow felt that they could make these private deals with these people, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So I encourage you to look at Arnie Leff's record, look at Keith Sugar's record, look at what these people have really done, not what they're saying they're going to do, and they're not really saying much. As I said, Arnie Leff, the great medical marijuana supporter, has not approached city council. And I hear this, oh, there's a black market, we can do it like we've done then. I hope you do. But why the hell isn't the great passionate spokesman up there doing something? I don't blame David for any of this. I regard David as a person who is a trusting soul in this matter, and unfortunately he gets let down. And it's maybe important that we have people who are willing to trust other people in these circumstances. I, on the other hand, am much more of a skeptical soul, and I've got to tell you, I encourage you to mix a dose of skepticism with a hope in the future of these particular candidates. You know, there could be a big green elephant in the back of the building, but I don't think there is. You know, there could be a wonderful Arnie Leff supporting meaningful police review in our future, but that has not been the case in the past. So, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. People are invited to call in. And this one's in honor of Steve, a man who likes Tom Lehrer.
Sharks gotta swim and bats gotta fly. I gotta love one woman till I die. To Ed or Dick or Bob, she may be just a slob, but to me, well, she's my girl. In winter, the bedroom is one large ice cube, and she squeezes the toothpaste from the middle of the tube. Her hair's in the sink have driven me to drink, but she's my girl. She's my girl. She's my girl. my girl, and I love her. The girl that I lament for, the girl my money's spent for, the girl my back is bent for, the girl I owe the rent for, the girl I gave up Lent for, is the girl that heaven meant for me. So though for breakfast she makes coffee that tastes like shampoo, I come home for dinner and get peanut butter stew. Or if I'm in luck, it's broiled hockey puck. But oh well, what the hell, she's my girl, and I love her.
And you're at Free Radio Santa Cruz's 96.3 FM spot on the dial. We're illegal, but we're here 24 hours a day, and our phone lines are open, 427-3772. So jump on your phone line if you're near one and you don't have to spend 35 cents, and let us hear from you if any of what we're saying makes any sense. I'm afraid most of the candidates don't make any sense at all, or let's say they're up to making dollars and spending dollars instead of making any sense, to use a bad pun. I'm hoping that we can find a way to hold these people accountable. I think the only way to hold the candidates accountable is to organize in the community in numbers around the issues that we need them to be accountable about, and that's easier said than done, no question about it. Again, remind you, Resident The Unidos meets tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at 124 Lee Brandt Street, and we're going to be dealing with the City Council's closed session day after tomorrow, 1 o'clock at City Hall at 809 Center Street. What's up on the City Council's closed agenda? They don't want to bring it out into the open, you see. It's the Dolphin property acquisition negotiations. Instead of discussing the guarantees that Keith Sugar promised, that SCAN mandated, that the community wants, that the tenants deserve, that they will not be kicked out of the current housing, we are getting straight sale, purchase of the property from owner Terry McElroy, and hundreds of people will then face the tender mercies of Mercy Charities Housing. Mercy Charities Housing has a history of, it provides affordable housing for some, but it kicks out a number of people. It selects very carefully, and the people who are there, some of them won't be able to get back in. Now, I've heard it said, and recently, by a worker in a Latino organization, that there are other people vying for the McElroy property. One person who recently purchased the Riverside Apartments. He admitted that even though that man raised the rents of the Riverside Apartments, very few people left. And apparently people were not evicted. My concern is that Mercy Charities Housing has a much more vanilla, dare I say, honky standard of behavior. And it's sort of the Keith Sugar's let them go back to Mexico, we don't want them living filthy, squalid, packed in like sardines conditions, and that they have a sort of a density prejudice. And I don't have a lot of clear information on that. So if any of you out there have more information on Mercy Charities Housing, which hasn't been answering my letters, nor has Catherine Byers for that matter, though she did promise that no one would be evicted, but just doesn't want to put that in writing. You know, we like to promise, but we want to keep our fingers crossed, that sort of thing. Please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833 off-air, or you can call now. I think we're going to be probably going till 3 o'clock since the current talk show host hasn't arrived. Call on air at 427-3772. Anyway, the Dolphin is coming up on the City Council's closed agenda. It doesn't mean we can't talk about it before they close the agenda. Sugar has shown this strange proclivity to allow some conversation on a subject based on his sort of impetuous feeling of the moment, his impulsive sense of what he wants to allow, rather than any even-handed formal process that allows people a specific amount of time to frame their thoughts. Usually it's 3 minutes, should be longer, but that's what it's traditionally been. He's cut it back to 2 minutes, he's cut it back to zero, he's cut tenants off before even allowing them to speak before the closed session, and allowed other businessmen from the Del Mar Theater to talk at length. This was a week ago. So I'm kind of, I'm not really curious to know what's going to happen. I have a sort of a vague dread of what's going to happen tomorrow, day after tomorrow. In order to give you some idea of what has happened in the past, I'm going to play you the tape of a closed, the talk before a closed session, that moment, those few moments when the public is allowed to speak. This session was held about 2 or 3 weeks ago in the September 12th, actually, in the city council's city manager's conference room, which is where they usually hold those little schmoozy conclaves with the city attorney, John Barisoni, Dick Wilson, Seal Cirillo, all those $100,000-plus employees, and the city council members. People were sitting talking, and Sugar immediately insisted we leave the table and go sit at the side of the room. That's where this tape begins.
Sugar is segregating the table and removing the table's options from the public. Only the staff and council are allowed at the table.
And actually, what's happening here is Becky Johnson, Bernard Klitzner, I think Veronica Lopez Duran, and several other people are in the room waiting to speak to the council before closed session. Tim Fitzmaurice is the person sitting closest to us, and a dialogue, you might call it that, develops between Bernard Klitzner and Tim Fitzmaurice. Shuffling around here. There's a bit of muttering going on. It's kind of hard to hear. It gets clearer.
No, landlord advocates. I was asked, were there any unlawful detainers by the landlord? Obviously, you're representing the landlord's interest.
I asked you a question.
Don't be unclear about that.
Yes or no?
Don't be unclear. I refuse to answer that question.
And Tim Fitzmaurice was asked by Becky Johnson if he knows how many unlawful detainers, evictions, were made from the Dolphin, because he's been claiming that it's only landlord advocates who oppose the city council's project to turn everything over to Mercy Charities Housing, and he refused to answer Becky Johnson's question.
You don't know the answer?
I don't know. No, I don't think it's fair to say that it was one of the tenant advocates. After the Relocation Advisory Committee shut down its meetings, presumably with your connivance, Tim, for 2 months, you wouldn't meet with any of the tenants that I'm aware of. They should have some more information. Tim is leaving the room rather than discuss this.
And that's a little hard to hear. But what happened there was I told Tim that it's for 2 months, he wouldn't let the tenants speak at these Relocation Advisory Committee meetings, the official city body where tenants from the Dolphin and the Lee were supposed to advise the redevelopment agency. He actually threw his proxy, Yolanda Goda, through the people who the city council appointed and controls, refused to allow those meetings to be held, even though a majority of the Relocation Advisory Committee, the tenants, wanted those meetings to be held. And I've pointed out that Tim Fitzmaurice, who will be Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, God help us all, in November, has stated that, he will be the new landlord. I mean, the city, he will be the mayor, and the city will be the landlord through Mercy Charities Housing. So if anybody's a member of the Landlord Liberation Front, as Tim likes to call those of us who are there trying to defend the rights of the tenants, it's him. It's kind of a complete turnaround, and it's a strange irony. This is all information before the council meeting, and you're going to hear some speeches shortly.
Speaking on the issue on tape is often a boomerang, because then you have to be held accountable for what you're saying.
Thanks for reminding me
of
that. Okay, we got a form. You've got 3 minutes.
I got a couple of items I want to bring to your attention. Two of them are I assume you're discussing the Brown Act cases that I raised, and I just want to say that if anybody has any questions about this, sure.
And what I bring up here is the Brown Act complaints I made. I filed four sets of Brown Act complaints claiming that this council has not been allowing people to speak at the mic without interruption, has been improperly agendizing items, has been not allowing any public comment on some items that they're supposed to have public comment on, and has essentially been allowing groups like Mercy Charities Housing, which is supposed to meet in public, to meet in private. A whole series of public process violations which make it difficult for the public to participate in what's going on and allow a kind of behind-the-scenes, backdoor deal to continue, and a smoke-filled room sort of syndrome to happen. And I'm talking a bit about that. I never learned that they were going to respond to any of my concerns, but I addressed them nonetheless, and then I talked about the Dolphin Lee.
You're welcome to discuss it. I filed another Brown Act letter yesterday around 5 o'clock alleging Brown Act violations. And as I told the city attorney in a phone message, my primary concern is not even securing monetary damages or anything of that sort. It is to make sure the city council follows the Brown Act in the future. And I would suggest Brown Act orientation sessions. I would suggest public be invited to know their Brown Act rights. That's my main interest there. James Ney is on your D5 agenda. He's claiming damages. Becky, I think, can talk to that. Some discussion of the main item, which is the acquisition of the property 136 Lee Grant. First of all, I'm concerned that any significant discussion of these issues are taking place behind closed doors without public access, and I think in violation of the Brown Act. You might say that's going to be kind of hard to prove because we don't have any access to these meetings. But as you know, in Los Angeles, a Rampart police officer turned the whole department upside down at one point. And so I don't think you should act with complete assurance here in the city council that your substantive decisions behind closed doors, and we don't hear substantive discussions at city council on this issue generally, they just suddenly appear with a resolution of Catherine Byers. It's all suddenly made up. I don't believe that came out of nowhere. I believe it came out of discussions in this meeting in violation of the Brown Act. Now, obviously, that'll have to be proved in the future. And I would appreciate it if the mayor would show respect to the public here, allowing me to speak to him and to the group generally. Apparently, he's not interested. Anyway, 136 Lee Brand property acquisition is what you're looking at today. I'm urging you to reconsider this action, or at least to postpone it until November. These are the apartments that were described by Mayor Sugar on May 31st as squalid, filthy, and packed in like sardines. I come to believe that these phrases were no accident, and that Mayor Sugar's racist perception and description of the living conditions of Beach Flats is widely shared by this.
And here we are going to turn over the tape and continue. Again, listening to the September 12th closed session of City Council, the part where the public is still allowed in before we were shooed out.
Charities Housing Advisory Board to hold open meetings, repeatedly requested by the residents of the Dolphin Lee this spring in a letter, as well as at sessions of attendance, as well as at City Council. You perhaps will be discussing that later since I'm renewing my claims about holding open meetings. Property acquisition is racist because you're choosing to disregard the wishes of the tenants who express their clear distrust for antipathy to and bad experiences with your sole source low-income housing provider, Mercy Charities Housing. They did this clearly, as I said, in petitions, in your own official relocation advisory committee in May, and at city council meetings directly in English and Spanish. This is reminiscent of the 1998 BSOL summer when there was the same staff urging many of the same players to hustle before a similar set of fall elections. You are a lame duck council. Your responsibility is to let the voters have a say in this issue before forcing the next council into decisions that may be rejected by the voters. And finally, this acquisition is racist because you're putting the Dolphin tenants in a position where they are going to have to abide by Mercy Charities Housing's decisions without any guarantees. And their admittedly crowded conditions now may result in massive evictions. Mercy Charities has refused to return any phone calls. It has declined, as has the redevelopment agency, to give the public any information. Instead, we see the situation here where council members are meeting behind closed doors, no redevelopment agency meeting today in public whatsoever. my request, Christopher Crone, put an item on the agenda apparently is not being considered or discussed, and I'm sorry about that. I think you need a public process, and I think that you're forcing us into a position where we have to file lawsuits, and we have to press on with legal actions and the kinds of public confrontations that we really shouldn't need to do to get this thing where it should be, in front of the public with a meaningful process where the tenants are really involved. So, I want to thank you for listening, and I hope that's helpful for you, though somehow we have to.
Okay, I too am disturbed that you're doing so much business in closed session, both here in this
Becky
room
Johnson
and
speaking.
Then also at the Mercy Charities Advisory Board, which continues to be held in closed sessions. Also, I'm here to speak as representative of the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee. We recently passed two resolutions. One, we're holding a forum on October 28th, the public forum, about the Dolphin/Lee project, or perhaps 86th/Lee project. And our membership resolved on August 31st that a project proposed to provide affordable housing does not actually displace people who currently have what is probably the most affordable housing in the city. Two, that the Dolphin tenants not be transferred over to new management until all existing tenants are guaranteed they will not be displaced by Mercy Charities housing without cause. And three, that the city make as a condition of purchase that the seller not evict tenants to thin out the Dolphin population, as was done by the Seaside Company on the Rex Court property. The other resolution, which I want to remind you of, okay, I'll leave that for Bernard. The second resolution that was passed on September 6th by the Housing and Homelessness Subcommittee of SCAN, that SCAN urged the city set forth and adopt by resolution, relocation benefits are sufficient. No, this was from the May 31st, I'll let Bernard do that. You're also talking about the James Nay damages here. I was a witness to that, and I do have the videotape, which you've probably seen. And you'll see he was holding a little plastic bag with his belongings, which I believe contained a camera and a tape recorder and other valuable items. He also had a blanket, too. And in that detention, with no arrest, for which he had deep cuts in his wrists from the handcuffs, which I videotaped as well, his belongings were never returned to him, nor were they properly booked into property. And so you have an obligation to compensate him for that loss.
Right, just adding, to Bernard Klitzner, adding to that on James Nay, I think there's indisputable evidence now, that he got his bags and stuff ripped off by the police, and you have a responsibility, to reimburse him. If you don't, I know he's going to court. It's going to cost the city a lot more than $250 by the time you get through with it if you don't take care of him today. I want that done. Okay, and now we want to go back to the Dolphin tenants. I want to remind you, that SCAN has endorsed all of the candidates, all of you city council people are sitting right here on this table. And they have told you, on their May 31st resolution, relocation benefits are sufficient to house all residents for the entire period of time that the residents were dislocated. I want you to make sure, that that's done before you purchase this property. Two, reentry criteria should not exclude any current residents. All current residents must be allowed to go back, to the new housing. And three, enough units will be built to accommodate all the current residents. So, you know, it's your own organization, you know, that's passed this.
Yeah.
And I want you, you know, to abide by, you know, by that resolution. You know, you have to support the tenants here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, guys. A staff member?
It doesn't really matter.
Closed session
of the
council?
Closed session of the council.
No, staff member.
Oh, I wanted to say.
Did you?
We were about to all be ushered out and have Veronica Lopez present her stuff. She's not a staff member, so they had to let us stay in while she made a public presentation. And what she ended up presenting was about 30 signed pages, one side in English, one side in Spanish, which had three statements on it. One supported the purchase of the Dolphin property by the city. Another supported stated they were not members of Residente Unidos. And a third said that they rejected the intimidating tactics of Robert Norris, who said that they would all be out by Christmas, or they would be evicted by Christmas. And the interesting thing was, all these pages were individually signed by people who were allegedly tenants of either the Dolphin or the Lee. I guess the Dolphin, probably. And when we attempted to get copies of these public documents later, they had all been shredded, except for one, which was, I mean, they were identical documents, but each of them was signed with a different name, so they were all different documents. And speaking on reading the document and speaking up for Mercy Charities Housing was new Mercy Charities Housing employee Veronica Lopez Duran, who previously was an employee of the redevelopment agency and who had previously been accused of Nina Ruiz, Residentes Unidos representative during the summer, of misleading tenants into claiming that Residentes Unidos had been pressuring them and was requiring for their continued tenancy that they support Residente Unidos, which was not true. And the tenants, which was not true according to what I was told, and also when I talked to the tenants, and I was there, the tenants said that was not true, that they did not, they wanted to make a complaint against the management, but not against Residente Unidos. So Veronica Lopez Duran improperly translated that in an earlier translation she did several months ago when she was still a member of the redevelopment agency and pushing the redevelopment agency agenda. Redevelopment Agency's agenda to essentially get people lined up behind the city project and to cut back the power of Residente Unidos to oppose it. Here she is speaking at the closed session of City Council.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead,
Brian. Yeah. As a lot of you know, and some of you may not know, I'm now working with Mercy Charities directly with the tenants to make sure that there is a project that comes forward that does reflect the needs and interests of the tenants. I met with a lot of, or most of the tenants, door by door last week, and then met with a smaller group last week as well, and out of that came residents proposed to send something to you since they can't be here at the 12 o'clock session, and they thought that there might be a meeting going on at 5, so a lot of people were planning to come at 5, but since that's not taking place, what did take place is there's a letter that signed by the Dolphin tenants, and it was other tenants that went to the tenants talking about, you know, what's on this letter, and it came from them in terms of these are the things they want to get across for you, to you before you go into your 12 o'clock session. And I can read that if you'd like in here in open session. And the Spanish version is what, you know, they looked at, and so I'm reading the English version of that. Dear City Council members, unfortunately, we are unable to attend the council meeting at 12 p.m. As residents of 136 Labrat, we would like to communicate the following to you before going into closed session, where you will be touching on the buying, selling of the properties at 131, 133, and 136 Labrat. Number one, we are not part of Residentes Unidos, but we would like to take an active part in the redevelopment of the project in Beach Flats. Number two, we are in agreement with this council buying the properties at 131, 133, and 136 Labrant as soon as possible. Number three, we are not in agreement with the intimidation tactics used by Robert Norris, saying that we will be displaced by Christmas Eve. Finally, we hope that in your closed session today, you will take the necessary action to move forward with the purchase of the already mentioned properties. And so I'll leave you with these that they asked me to deliver, and that's it.
Paid employee of Mercy Charities Housing. Paid employee of Mercy Charities Housing, for the record. For the record.
Yes.
And that was the pre-closed session of the closed session of the September 12th City Council meeting, where Veronica Lopez Duran showed up with the disappearing testimonials that they were presented to City Council, but then shredded, apparently. And I use the word shredded advisedly, not fancifully, because I understand that's what I'm told happens to all documents on the table after the closed session. They are shredded. So even though these documents were presented at open session and the public had a right to see them, this City Council shredded them. That is a Brown Act violation, I believe, among scores of others that the Council has done. And they've shown no inclination to change their policies around this issue. Lots of good stuff to play you. But we're about 2 minutes to three, and I think Lady Scararms is going to be coming in here pretty quick, and she's going to kick a little butt and get my my butt out of here. Let me take a quick look. Yeah, let's see. Sunday, cut your hair and get a fucking job with Lady Scararms. I'm scared of Scararms. And Baby Greaser James. So, hey, you know, I think I better start packing up here. I want to thank you for being with us for this extra long edition of Bathrooms, Beers, Broadsides. I'm going to linger here a bit in hopes of getting still more time. Boy, do I steal the time on this air show, but I need it because there's lots of stuff to get out to you and never enough time to get it out. Let's play another one for Steve, who lives just around the corner from me, who's a Tom Lehrer fan, and advise him that we will be getting him hopefully a whole tape of his favorites. Lehrer is always a good listen, and he's songs proposed 30 or composed 30 or 40 years ago, actually, well, yeah, 40, 45 years ago in the early 50s. Before we do that, however, here's a quick call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Am I on the air?
You are.
All right. This is Eon Blues, and I'm in the tree sit in Wisdom.
All right, Ian.
And I'm listening to you on our new antenna that we just hooked up so that people could listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I see. Well, that's excellent. And how is the view up there?
It's amazing up here, yeah.
Wow.
You can see the whole Monterey Bay area.
And how are you inviting the entire community to come join you in the tree sit, or would that be a little too much?
If you're up for a good hike, we're up for more people in the woods.
And if people want more information, Ian, how can they learn about this?
You can always call our voicemail, and we'll get back to you.
And
our voicemail is 425-32... I'm hearing all kinds of echoes of myself right now.
Okay, take it again.
I hear an echo in the cell phone, an echo in the radio and all this. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Crap. Oh, you said, I'll tell you what, Robert, I've never been so happy to hear your voice in my life.
Right.
Just the thought that I would tune you in from all the way out here in Corralitos, and, and you're the first voice I hear is beautiful.
Thank you.
So you call our voicemail at 425-3205.
425-3205, and
yes.
And the name of the group that people should ask for is
Earth First.
Earth
and,
First.
Yes, and we're picking up Free Radio Santa Cruz loud and clear with Uncle Dennis's 6x8 foot antenna that we just brought out here.
All right. Anything coming up this week that people should know about, Ian?
This week?
Yeah.
We're always looking for more people to help hike out supplies and make flyers and do outreach. So I encourage people to plug in 425-3205. We have meetings every Tuesday night at 7 at the Hub, 224 Walnut Avenue.
Okay. Sounds good. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you very much.
All right, Ian.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And who says we don't get the open-air calls? Hey, there's a man who is actually glad to hear me. I'm amazed. Thank you very much. It's good to get at least one person who's glad to hear. And do give a call to that phone number. If you've forgotten the number, give a call to 423-HUFF, and we will give it to you again. Then let's bounce into Tom Lehrer and then probably bounce out of the studio. We should be coming back to you on Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. That's our usual Thursday evening time, 6 to 8. Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides with me, your endless host, will return. And until then, it's 423-HUFF if you want to get in touch. And if you want to get in touch with voicemail at Free Radio, it's 427-4523. It's the menace of dead air. Let me quickly deal with what appears to be the end of the Tom Lehrer tape. Yes, just as I suspected. However, luckily, it has a side B, and we're going to try that now. We thought it had a side B. That's interesting. It looks like it starts real late, or it doesn't start at all. So, instead of Tom, we are going to catch another phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Did you press play?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thank you for that. A little bit of technical assistance. I sometimes get lost in the woods with all those trees.
And the power's on?
And the power is on. I think it's just that we got a blank tape, if you know what I mean.
Blank side B?
B appears to be blank. I'm going to have to take it back and do some blankety blanking.
Well, you better watch out. Old lady Scare Arms is coming to get you.
She better. She's late, man. It's 3:05 already.
Uh-oh.
I'm taking over her time if she doesn't show up.
Well, I understand she's going to be playing the recent speech from Medea Benjamin that was at the Vets Hall.
Oh, maybe I should find it and play it for her.
No, she's got it.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, what have we here? We must have something. Well, here's an interview from L.A. that we never got to play. Now we should perhaps take this opportunity. My producer carefully queued this up. Now we'll get a chance to have you hear at least a little of it until our infamous scar-armed woman arrives. Looks like it is a fault with the tape recorder, but we do have, at last, the talk show host has arrived.
I don't understand why you think it's okay to stay on the air for so many hours in a row, huh?
I'm getting a little flack here from the next talk show host, but it's all in good fun.
Show.
I think I'm going to leave now before I get
your butt.
Before I get my butt beaten up. Ah, wait, no, don't do it.
Robert, You're still on the air here.
Well, yes, we try to keep Free Radio on the air 24 hours.
Why don't you throw on a song or something, huh?
How about a song?
Why don't you be a responsible programmer?
Responsible? Well, I thought that you were.
We can't have dead air here.
Certainly not. Well, all right, we'll throw a little something on here that will keep everything rolling. Let's see if we can find something truly appropriate. Not much of a music buff. I will play. Here's a little something from Santa Cruz in 1994 when the folks were breaking windows on Pacific Avenue.
Okay, it's January 1st, 1994. We're in Santa Cruz, approaching the Pacific Garden Mall on Church Street. Something of a small riot has broken out, apparently, according to this report. I was present when Carlos came up to me in the alley around the corner from the Cafe Royale and told me that a lot of broken glass was in the street. Apparently police had charged drummers at the